Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
It's a devastating blow, but if you're ranked as the number one offensive line in the National Football League, which Pro Football Focus had the Philadelphia Eagles at entering this season, one would surmise that you should be able to overcome it. That doesn't mean it's not a devastating loss. It doesn't mean it's something that can't compromise your success to some degree. Because if you're Jalen Hurts, if you are Saquon Barkley, obviously that offensive line had an enormous amount to do with the success you enjoyed. We know how valuable he is to the Philadelphia Eagles, so you got to hope that ultimately he's going to be okay. But in the same breath, even with him, even with Becton gone to the Chargers, it's one of those situations where if as a unit you're considered number one, it's a hole you should be able to plug to some degree is all I'm saying.
Stephen A. Smith, good morning. It's Jeremy and Joe. Jeremy is off today. Nate Geary is in. We are 2 weeks away from the start of the season. Eagles and Cowboys, 14 days from today. On the Western Hotline, Lou DiBiase from Locked On Eagles. It's 14 teams in 14 days, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Get a Northtown Engine Shield engine protection warranty on new and used vehicles. Going through all the Bills' opponents, Philadelphia, Week 17. You know, we've talked to Lou a couple times about this game, and as we've talked about, it's possible that neither team's even playing for a lot. But maybe divisions are still on the line by then.
Yeah, or at least like a bye week. I mean, there's only one spot in each conference now to get a bye. So I think the starters will be playing, but I do think the NFL messed this up. I don't know why this game wasn't earlier. I mean, it's two of your top three teams in the NFL.
Yeah. So what's the biggest story at Eagles camp? There was the injury to Dickerson on the offensive line, and that ended up being better than maybe people feared at first. What does a Super Bowl champion team talk about at training camp? Because it feels like it's hard for just anything to be like, oh, this guy's injured or this guy doesn't look good. Yeah, but we won the Super Bowl, so whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like it's very zoomed in. Like right now, I think there's a lot of worry about that third cornerback spot. So I know first world problems for a roster that's pretty complete, but I think people are concerned, you know, behind Quinyon Mitchell and Cooper DeJean, Darius Slay did go to Pittsburgh. Isaiah Rodgers left in free agency as well to Minnesota. I think people were high on Kiwi Ringo, another Georgia player who was a 4-3 speed, high upside corner. And he just, it's very similar to when Rasul Douglas was in Philadelphia. It feels like the front office really likes the player, but the coach doesn't. It doesn't feel like he fits the scheme. And so surprisingly, Adoree Jackson's been beating him out. And I think people are a little bit concerned about that second outside cornerback spot because they do want to keep Cooper DeJean in the slot. But yeah, I mean, overall for a team that I think, again, it's still the most complete in the NFL. I think it's kind of first-world problems what Eagles fans are a little bit worried about right now, but I think people are definitely looking at those starters that, you know, on the defensive side of the ball left in free agency, if these younger players can step up and, you know, kind of continue that four.
How about on their defensive line? They lose a couple guys, Milton Williams, Josh Sweat. That group so far, like, will they be as terrorizing, you think, this year as – I mean, last year I felt like everyone knew it. Like, you didn't need to know their PFF grades or their pass rush win rate to know that, like, that's one of the best defensive lines in football, if not the best.
Yeah, I do feel like the floor is a little bit lower because they are naturally younger now and more inexperienced on the defensive line. You know, Milton Williams and Josh Sweat leave. In comes Jalix Hunt, a second-year edge rusher that's still definitely raw. I mean, he had a great playoffs, but not sure if he'll be able to carry the load as a top two player. I think they thought he'd be a bigger part of the rotation in year two than in his rookie season. But now suddenly, yeah, I mean, Brandon Graham retiring as well. Jalix Hunt's that go-to guy opposite Nolan Smith. And then it's Moro Ejoma at defensive tackle replacing Milton Williams. Both players, again, a very high ceiling, but the floor is definitely lower. But I will say, just to add context, like, of course, the last thing we saw of Josh Sweat and Milton Williams, it was them wrecking the Super Bowl. It was them both terrorizing Patrick Mahomes. Like, Josh Sweat almost won Super Bowl MVP. But during the regular season, like, they were good, not great players. Like, I don't think there's going to be you know, that hard of a ceiling to reach to replace those two. Like, I do think Ajoma and Hunt can, you know, get to what those guys were at in the regular season. And then for, like, Jalen Carter and Nolan Smith, like, they're going to only be better this year. Jordan Davis as well. So I like who they brought in for agency. I think they'll be fine. But, yeah, I do think the ceiling is higher, but the floor is definitely a little bit lower.
Jalen Carter, who, Nate, this is true. Lou has a T-shirt of Jalen Carter. Remember the image of Carter hitting Mahomes in the face with his hand, like almost stiff-arming him? Lou's just got that image on a T-shirt, right, Lou? Mahomes getting hit in the face?
I mean, yeah, it's one of the most iconic moments in Eagles history. I mean, it's great. I love it.
Yeah. On the offense, this is what they are, right? Like, they're going to run the ball with Barkley, and the passing volume will be down a little bit, I would think, right? Like, they didn't really need to be throwing the ball as much as some teams last year. So, like, A.J. Brown sees a little bit of a decline in, like, his target volume, I should say, more so. But, again, like, Barkley's Barkley. So, does their offense look basically the same as it did last year?
Yeah, I mean, that's their identity, and they're still going to be the best running team in football this year with Saquon, that elite offensive line, and Jalen Hurts. But I do think there's, like, a middle ground between what they did last year and suddenly becoming, like, one of the more pass-heavy teams in the NFL. I just don't think Saquon Barkley can hold up if you give him that kind of usage rate again. I think when you look at the history of the NFL, like, DeMarco Murray after 2014, Adrian Peterson after 2012, Sean Alexander after 2005, like, running backs that got that many touches normally the next year do not replicate that production because most of the time they end up getting injured. So for the Eagles, like, yeah, Saquon should still be the face of this offense, but he needs to be the face of the offense when it matters most, at the end of the year in the playoffs. And so for him to hold up again, I think they need to not only use their other running backs, like A.J. Dillon and Will Shipley had good summers, but I think you do need to rely on Jalen Hurts in the passing game more, and I think you will be able to do that more this year. Like, I think what you saw from Jalen down the stretch in the NFC title in the Super Bowl, I think it's a sign of things to come. And I think in 2022, in the first half of 2023, Jalen showed, like, you know, he can be more than what he was this past season as a game manager quarterback, basically. So I think there's a middle ground between who they were last year and, I guess, who they were that first Super Bowl run. They're going to have to pass it more, I think, just naturally to keep Saquon upright.
Did you see the Aaron Glenn comment yesterday about the Eagles?
It's not a passing league.
Yeah. So, like, I wonder about that as a build to emulate. Like, the Eagles have done it. But here's the Jets coach yesterday. The back and forth was, like, a reporter said, well, like, this is a passing league, when asking his question, and Glenn cut him off and said, who said it was a passing league? The reporter goes, this isn't a passing league, and Glenn says, the team that won the Super Bowl, what were they in passing? 29th. What were they in running? Yeah. First. But then, as everyone pointed out, like, EPA per dropback, Philadelphia's fifth. Like, all the passing efficiency stats, they're at the top. So I almost feel like, yeah, if you hear another team bring that up, a coach bring that up, I don't think you really understood what the Eagles were, and I think you might just be using that as an excuse to say that your own quarterback isn't that great.
Yeah, when you watch the Super Bowl, I mean, the Chiefs took out Saquon Barkley. Jalen Hurts had to throw to win that championship. So, I mean, I still think the NFL is a passing league, but when you do look at the numbers, like, teams are playing cover two at, like, an all-time high, or at least compared to the last, like, you know, decade and a half. So I think teams naturally will have to commit more to the run to get teams to, you know, switch things up on the defensive side of the football, because everybody is trying to stop the deep ball. So, you know, most defenses are running these, you know, two high shells. So he kind of has a point. I think you, not just the Eagles, but, like, the Bills. I mean, the Bills kind of ran their way. Not that Josh Allen wasn't the MVP, but, like, they really committed to the run game as well throughout the majority of the regular season. James Cook had a career year. So I think, you know, you look at the teams in the final four this year of the NFL playoffs, like, yeah, a lot of them were committed to running the football. Or the Chiefs, like, I mean, it wasn't running, but they throw behind the line of scrimmage more than any team in the NFL. So I think, like, that is how you get the defense to come down more. But no, I don't think this will suddenly, the league's going to go to, you know, 1990s football where everybody's running it more than passing. But I think there is, again, kind of a middle ground you got to come to, because defenses definitely have adjusted.
Let me ask you this. Do you think, Lou, that this year they try to scale back a little bit with Barkley, considering what a workhorse he was last year? And does a little bit of that have to do with,
I mean, I've been a Will Shipley guy. I mean, I got him in some deep dynasty
this
leagues.
This
I've been
is,
sitting
this is
on
a
my,
question yeah. disguised in Nate has Will
I was
Shipley
say, this
in
is a
dynasty,
dynasty
league.
Question.
Yeah, I have him in like three leagues in my taxi squad. I've just been waiting to unleash my Will Shipley. Is this year, is he gonna get some run, some burn, or what?
No, I actually really like what I've seen from Will Shipley in the summer. Like the first two preseason games, he's looked a lot better than last year. I think he's going to catch a lot of passes. I think they want to emphasize throwing to the running back more. Jalen, I think, is going to get the ball out a lot faster this year. Kind of learned that in the second half of 2024. So I like Shipley. I actually think that, you know, from a touch perspective, he's the guy to own over A.J. Dillon behind Saquon Barkley in that backfield. But both have looked good this summer. Yeah, I think, again, like, as I was saying, they're going to have to pass more to keep Saquon healthy, but they should also rely more on the running backs they have. I think this is a much more talented backfield behind Saquon than they've had. Like last year, it was all Kenneth Gainwell, and I wasn't always the biggest Gainwell guy. I definitely think Shipley's an upgrade, and he's going to return the ball as well. So I don't know if your league gets return yardage points, but he'll be a go-to there as well in the kickoff return game. So, yeah, I'm drinking the Shipley Kool-Aid as well. He catches the ball so naturally. I think he can be like your very poor man's version of what they used to have with Sproles.
Let me ask you this, too. The trade, the swap for John Mechie, is that a Jahan Dotson, like he's on watch for maybe not being the third receiver, or is it just strictly back of the roster, you know, kind of filling depth stuff?
No, I think it's more of a depth move. Dotson's had a really good summer. I'm very high on Dotson. Like, he made a couple big plays in that Super Bowl, and he's had a strong summer. So I think it was more when you look behind that top three, they had Johnny Wilson, an undrafted rookie, Darius Cooper had a strong camp, and then, like, Anaya Smith. So they were, like, one injury away from really being in trouble at wide receiver. We all know Dallas Goedert just does not stay healthy every single year, and they're pretty thin at tight end behind him too. So like they just needed more pass catchers, more complete players. Like Johnny Wilson's a 6'6" towering guy that has like a niche role, but if like A.J. Brown or Devontae Smith got hurt long term, Johnny Wilson's not a player you want on the field every single play. Yeah. Maybe in the red zone and in like short yardage situations, but Mechie's a more complete route runner, a more complete player than who they had. So I think, you know, and Dotson isn't a rookie final season of his contract, so they did not pick up his fifth-year option. I think it has less to do with Dotson this year, but yeah, for the future and for depth, I think that was more of the focus getting Mechie.
Week one, Eagles and Cowboys 2 weeks away, -6.5 for Philadelphia. Is that enough? Think that number should be higher?
That seems fair. Week one's always weird, especially that first preseason game, but first regular season game. But, I mean, I do feel like the Super Bowl champion normally wins that game. I mean, it's very rare. The Lions were, like, the first team in a while that got that win against Kansas City. But, you know, majority of the time, the champion does win. So, I feel like that's fair. I don't even know if Parsons is going to play in this game, though, for Dallas.
Right.
So I don't love that defense. I think the Eagles will be able to put up points. -6.5. I think that's fair, though, because, again, week one, especially the opener, is so weird. So, yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah, looking back, looks like maybe only two of the last 10 years, the non-Super Bowl winner won that game, and it happened in back-to-back years.
The Broncos, right? They beat the Ravens?
Oh, that's further back. But, oh, that's in there. They beat the Panthers.
Right. Okay, yeah.
The Bills. They beat the Rams. Smoked them.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah,
smoked them in the opener in L.A., and then you mentioned that Lions game. Yeah, I don't think Parsons plays. By the way, or he could play, but I don't know. The other game that has a big, like, there's not a lot of big spreads in week one. The two games that have big spreads are the NFC East games. It's Eagles -6.5 over Dallas, and then it's Washington -6.5 over the Giants. Both teams favored by the same amount, although most, I think, would usually put the Giants below Dallas. So
I kind of have them ahead of them, though. I kind of am drinking the Giants Kool-Aid a little bit.
Man.
Are you a Jackson? Are you a Jackson Dart guy?
I'm a Dart guy. I thought he looked great in the preseason. Their pass rush is going to be ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
I mean, I wish Dart was starting because I kind of liked what they're building a little bit in New York.
I was going to say, like, would you have them finishing third this year?
I have them finishing third. I have Dallas in last right now.
Dallas in last.
Why is it? Because, I mean, they've got such a great coaching staff.
I mean, Schottenheimer's running the team. I just think their defense is going to be terrible. They don't have a running game either. It just feels like they're such a one-dimensional. I love the Pickens trade, but, yeah, Dallas is just, like, good at one thing and one thing only. I think New York's a more complete team.
Schottenheimer was the first NFL head coach to seem genuinely surprised at his opening press conference. Like, he's like,
you guys are doing this. You're actually, this wasn't a prank?
This wasn't a joke. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, he was a real hot commodity in like 2011 after those two Sanchez years in New York.
But that's right. I mean,
Jerry Jones forgot what year it was when they're like, yeah, he's still a hot coach on the market. I mean,
he was the Jets' offensive coordinator
under Sanchez.
That Jets offense wasn't even good.
Yeah. Not now.
Offense wasn't even good. They have not had a bottom season. When's the last time they finished fourth?
They bottomed out?
They finished fourth in the division 10 years ago. So 10 years ago, they finished fourth in the division. It's the only time it's happened in 20 years.
Well, that's only because Washington has been so bad. Even in the Dallas down years when, like, Dak's been out or just, like, you know.
Yeah, I would love
Quincy
to see that.
Quincy Carter was their quarterback or something.
So, Lou, you're not watching the Jerry Jones Cowboys documentary on Netflix then, I presume?
No, it's too many documentaries. It's a team and a guy trying to stay relevant when a team or a player that's close to him is doing better. Like, Michael Jordan was insecure of LeBron James, so he made that documentary. Jerry Jones insecure of the Eagles, so he made that documentary.
All right, but we got to let him go now. Sorry, Nate, we're out of time. Nate yesterday dropping a bomb at like 9:54 on an MJ take. All right, well, we won't devolve into that. Lou DiBiase, Locked On Eagles. You want to check out any more in Philadelphia, be sure to get it. And thanks, Lou.
Thanks, guys.
All right, we keep rolling through the schedule. 14 teams in 14 days.
Will Shipley, baby.
Yeah, look at this guy. We got a finite amount of time to talk to you. He asked about the guy who had 82 yards last season.
Listen, if you guys are going to make me wake up at 5 a.m., I'm going to get some dynasty questions in.
That's fair. I forgot about, we talked about this yesterday. There's a Chiefs documentary out right now. Bills have Hard Knocks, but Hard Knocks is recurring. There's this Cowboys documentary on Netflix. There's no earthly chance I'll ever watch the Kingdom one. But
no.
I might check out the Cowboys one.
I might, only for the same reason that, like, I would look directly into an eclipse. Like, the same reason that I would justify looking directly at an eclipse when you're not supposed to without the glasses.
Yeah.
Is the same reason I might watch the documentary. I might get rid of Netflix just because I don't want to accidentally come across it.
Yeah. It's just interesting to me that, like, they have – I want to, you know, about the 90s and the backstory of how he buys the team. And really, it's more for me, though, watching – if this is featured in that documentary, which I think it probably would be, them devolving it from Super Bowl champion Jimmy Johnson, Jerry Jones telling the world, like – I think this is an actual quote from the 90s. Like, I can win Super Bowls with a 500 coach. And then he did it the next year with Barry Switzer.
Yeah.
But he had all the players still. And since then, they've... I don't know, though, that he... I would say they've become a bit of a laughingstock.
Yes.
Whereas, like, the America's team, the ha, 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 like, that becomes a joke almost.
Yes.
I don't know that he sees it that way, though.
Because, no, he's oblivious.
Because he... What does he care about? Yeah. I don't know that he cares about the Super Bowls. I think he cares about
relevance,
and does he have all the power? There was a story last year that Jerry Jones was keeping Robert Kraft all out of the Hall of Fame, and that those two have been wrestling for, like, power in the league, because Goodell just works for the owners.
Yep.
So who's the lead owner is often the guy that has the most power, and that's been Jerry Jones, and Kraft has always been encroaching on that, and Jerry Jones is always just like, even though the other guy's the one who actually won.
Yep, a lot.
Who's the guy with all the power in the league? Who's deciding TV contracts? Who's got contracts at new stadiums with concessions and getting new stadiums built? It's this guy. But he doesn't win football games.
Yeah.
At least when they matter. So it's like, it's such a weird, weird legacy.
And it's almost like it's turned into these contract situations where, like, the worst kept secret in the league is that Jerry Jones keeps waiting and then paying more.
Right.
And he views it as like almost like a tactic that is working for him when he's paying over market price for okay players.
Right.
But he's way overpaying Dak.
Yeah.
He's overpaying CeeDee Lamb. CeeDee Lamb's a great player, but
He
paid above market price for CD because he waited.
But that's true. Like, he could have got him cheaper the year before.
He waited for Justin Jefferson to sign first.
Bill Barnwell did a good breakdown on this a couple weeks ago, that if you take all the big Cowboys contracts and you pay those guys
a year earlier
when most teams would, they would have saved, I think the number he came to was like $106 million.
Nice.
that they could have saved themselves had they held it back a little bit. 803-0550 is the phone number to the Bills. We'll talk with Sal coming up at 8 o'clock. No Gabe Davis signing as of yet, I don't think.
Was he here yesterday? Did he go to one of the chicken wing joints? Did anyone see him?
I didn't see tweets about that, but you know, that's the thing you do here. When we come back, there Warren Sharp was tweeting about an old Bills game that I want to bring up to lead to a question about the one seed and this year, because I think the one seed this season is more about it, it's more on the table this season than it ever has been. It has been every year. But this year, I feel like it's the only thing.
It's important.
The division feels like it's gonna happen, and the playoffs is gonna happen, and everything seems set up for them. Get to the one seed a little bit when we come back.
Bye week.
What's that?
I would just like to watch the wild card weekend.
Just take
at
a
home.
Breath. Take a breath and watch.
I'd like
the wild
to enjoy
card
the wild card weekend.
Yeah, I mean, we did last year.
We did.
Eventually, it was 10-7 late in the third quarter. People forget that. Like that Allen to Ty Johnson pass on 4th-and-1. The Broncos would have got the ball back.
Yes, at midfield.
It was 10-7 or 14-7. But they were down one score, whatever it was. 803-0550 is the phone number here on WGR.
Zero breathing room. He tries to sneak it. The ball is loose. Impossible. Do the Vikings have it? Scrambling for the ball. It is a touchdown. A fumbled snap and a touchdown for the Vikings.
So why are we playing that highlight? I'll explain.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Thanks, Jeremy Joe.
Enjoy pain.
That's not why. So Harrison Phillips was traded yesterday.
Yes, to the Jets.
To the Jets. Like, swap a late-round picks. Harrison Phillips, former Bills defensive tackle, to the Jets. So that tweet, that clip was making the rounds because the Viking, there was like a Vikings reporter or account that was attributing that fumbled snap to Harrison Phillips knowing the Bills snap count, which I've never heard before.
I've also never heard that, but
I also
it would
don't,
make sense.
It would seem like it would make sense until you watch the back camera angle and Harrison Phillips doesn't even make contact before the ball is fumbled. Mm. The Bills fumbled that ball on their own.
Yeah.
This is the Vikings regular season game, the craziest game like ever a couple years ago.
Davis, that was a pretty crazy game.
Speaking of Gabe Davis, he pushes Allen too quickly from behind. It kind of throws Josh off. The snap gets fumbled. Like, the ball's on the ground before there's a Viking that even makes contact. So, but whatever. Not what I'm worried about. Warren Sharp points out that the Bills lost that game to the Vikings as we're still waiting to see the Bills get the one seed. It hasn't happened yet. That year, had the Bills held on and won that Vikings game, they would have finished 14-2. They would have had home field advantage and the bye. They would have played the Jaguars in the divisional round. Instead of Cincinnati, they would have played the Jaguars. And then Cincinnati would have played Kansas City. Winner of that would have gone to play the Bills in the AFC Championship game at home. Now, there were two things I thought of. One, would it really have even been different? Because I've always thought of that game being very important. Like, you did lose the one seed because of that. But as he breaks it down, I think, well, wait a minute. That year, if I just play Cincinnati 7 days later in the same stadium, is anything different?
You do get the bye week.
You get the bye week,
and
I
they
guess.
got injuries in that.
So the Bengals,
wild card game.
The Bengals would have played two games. You would have played one.
Yes.
And the Bills, right? They had
and they that they was a something. Team that needed a break. It needed
they
a week
needed
off.
The break.
Yeah.
So that's okay. So that could be true.
Who got hurt?
Would it be different if they played Kansas City? I don't know.
Who did they play in the wild card there? Was it Pittsburgh?
No, Pittsburgh was the next year. So that was the Skylar Thompson game. You might be confusing years because the Pittsburgh game is where they lost Bernard and Gabe Davis was out, right? And I don't remember if they lost anybody in that Miami game. They could have. I don't remember. So, okay, could have been different. But I do think the overall point, if you don't want to even play the revisionist history game, is still correct of showing off the value of that one seed. Look at what that path looks like. That year, because the Bills lost that game, their path would have included playing in the wild card round against whoever, doesn't matter. In this case, it was Miami. And then having to play the Bengals and the Chiefs to get to the Super Bowl. But with the one seed, no wild card game, Jacksonville, and then only one of the Bengals or the Chiefs. And I think if you don't really feel like the one seed is really worth thinking about yet or caring about until maybe late in the year, like, I'm going to be thinking about it all year because of that type of difference. How much easier of a path that is. Do you think about the one seed, though, like this early on? Or does it wait for you until you start getting into the year? And the schedule starts breaking down and, you know, because, listen, the division isn't always a blowout. It's tight usually for at least a little bit. I mean, last year the Bills ran away with it, but there's 2 years ago that goes down to the final game of the season, and there's a year with New England where it goes to December. And in those years, maybe you're not thinking about the one seed as much, but I am always thinking about the one seed.
I think I'm also always thinking about the one seed because they haven't been able to get it. And I think maybe this year more than any year in years past, I'm thinking about it because it's the last year of the stadium.
And
if you could, have a home AFC championship game, I think that'd be, yeah. I think that'd be pretty cool.
I think that's the dream scenario, yeah, is winning the AFC championship game at home. Absolutely.
Even just, I mean, yes, of course, winning it, but just having it at home.
Yeah. And I think you would get it because, again, like every year you look back at the last 5-6 years and pretty much every season, what your path looks like if you're the one seed is you don't play in the wild card round and then you are playing
the lowest seed.
You're playing the highest seed. AFC South winner the next week. That is almost always how it breaks down. The path to the Super Bowl for the AFC's one seed each year of the last 5 years went Houston as their opponents. Houston, Buffalo, Houston, Kansas City, Jacksonville, Cincinnati. 1 year in there in 2021, it was Cincinnati, Kansas City. You know why that was the one seed's path, though? Because the winner of the one seed was the AFC South. Tennessee got it. And then in 20, Cleveland, Buffalo. So every year but one, you're getting not a Super Bowl contender in the second round, which makes it a lot easier. I mean, the Chiefs last year, not even a elite Chiefs team by their standard, they get Houston in the second round, who had been limping their way to the postseason.
Yep.
And I think that's just easy. Then at that point, all you got to do is beat the Bills, which obviously they have a way of doing that every January. So I'm thinking about it a lot. I think it's very important for the Bills this year. And doesn't it feel like it is set up for them?
It
does. The schedule,
does.
The divisions. But part of that might be dependent on how seriously you take the idea that the Bills division is going to be a lot easier than the Chiefs division. Because I do think that.
It's going to be a lot easier.
I think the Chargers and the Broncos are both.
I also think the Raiders probably have the best roster they've had and the best, most competent coaching they've had in.
I would maybe say they have the most competent quarterback they've had in a while.
Quarterback and head coach should really elevate their floor.
I don't know how I feel about their overall roster. It might be in better shape than it was last year. They still got some holes. Like, the line in the receiving core is still left to be desired a little bit. But they got Bowers.
They've got Bowers. Jacoby Myers is a nice player.
And that team's fourth.
Would you say that they're probably the best, worst team of any division?
Ooh, what is the best, worst team of any division? I mean, Lou likes the Giants.
Yeah, but
I mean, their defense is going to be awesome.
The defense is going to be great.
Yeah.
But like,
who's the best worst team in the division in the league? Let's go through it. What's everybody's worst team? The AFC East.
the
Miami
Jets or the Dolphins. Either way, okay. Neither of them are going to be on my list.
The Raiders, the Browns.
Nope. They're gonna have the number one pick.
Who's the worst team in the AFC South? Probably the team that starts Daniel Jones a quarterback.
Yeah, I would say the Colts. Yikes.
The Giants. The pick a team out of the NFC West. Like the Cardinals.
Cardinals. I actually kind of like the Cardinals. This
NFC
year.
West might be the answer here. Like deepest 1-4.
Yeah.
NFC North. NFC North.
Who's? Yeah, I mean,
no
it's
one's
be
bad
what?
In the NFC
Chicago?
North.
Chicago.
And then the South with hedge the Saints. The NFC North might be my answer. If Chicago's fourth, I love the coach. I think the quarterback's talented, obviously. I like a lot of their pieces around them. They've built up the line and the defense recently.
What are they? Are they a 9-10 win team?
I don't know if they can. Can you have four 9-10 win teams in one division? Because if I say they are, then I feel like I have to say they all are going to be, and how likely is that to happen?
Yeah, because I think,
you would say it about the Lions.
I guess how dependent are you on your thoughts about the Vikings, all about how good J.J. McCarthy is?
I am really struggling with what I think of the Vikings. I would say, actually, going into the season, the team I'm struggling to predict more than any.
The Vikings?
I feel pretty good about what most teams are going to be. At least how I feel about how they're
going to be. Their defensive roster is pretty strong.
Right.
Their front seven's strong.
I love the coach.
Love the coach.
Like he is one of my he'd be one of my top three coaches in the league. Like that dude is gonna get the most out of your quarterback. They have the best receiver in football,
and they probably
they have another good receiver. They have a great tight end. They have a good line.
They have a good running back.
They added as much in the offseason. Kevin Cole from Fantasy Points, he formerly of Pro Football Focus, he has this chart of like EPA added in an offseason. Like, just trying to statistically figure out, like, who added the most.
Yep.
And I think he had the Vikings as the team that improved more than any.
Yeah.
Like, not, without a quarterback upgrade this offseason. So, they did a lot of work there. They spent a lot of money. Defensive line, I think they added a couple pieces.
And then they traded Harrison Phillips.
But, so I like every single thing about the Vikings. Except for their quarterback.
Yeah.
I was not a McCarthy guy coming into the league. His school hid him as much as humanly possible.
But they did do the right thing by not extending Darnold.
Did they do the right thing by not extending Darnold? I don't know. I don't know. I think it was defendable to do it. But they had drafted a guy in the first round. So me being so down on McCarthy is why I'm skeptical. But I kind of have this faith in O'Connell that, like, don't worry about McCarthy. I'm going to get him to be a good quarterback because he does that with everybody, at least the few that he's been challenged with so far. 803-0550 is the...
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Phone number. College football starts on Saturday.
This Saturday.
They're talking about
in Ireland.
Some of the matchups. Notre Dame and Miami.
Yeah.
Ooh, I love that one.
Yeah.
I hate Miami.
Carson Beck.
Yes.
Give me a break.
Maybe Nate's got some hot takes on Notre Dame to
get us. Sure do.
803-0550 is the phone number. Jeremy's off. It's Jody Biasi, Nate Geary here on WGR. We also just, if you missed it in on-demand audio, we just had Lou DiBiase on the Philadelphia Eagles Week 17 as part of our 14 Teams in 14 Days feature. That is brought to you by Nortown Automotive. Get a Nortown Engine Shield Engine Protection Warranty on new and used vehicles. All right, welcome back to Jeremy and Joe here on WGR. 803-0550 is the phone number. We got Sal Capaccio coming up next on Bills practice yesterday. And we're under a week away from the 53-man roster.
That's right.
Who's the player you're wondering most about the 53-man roster right now? Shavers?
Shavers is up there.
I don't know how many there are.
Well, this
like there are
kid
there
from West Point might make a late run at this.
He just showed up last week.
He did.
Was already featured on Hard Knocks.
Yep.
If that matters. Looked good in that preseason game. There was the clip of Sean McDermott in Hard Knocks talking about him earning more reps
yep.
with the types of plays he had against the Giants. And that's at linebacker, where the Bills' depth is Joe Andreessen, who had a tough preseason game. But
he did.
I mean, it feels like everything before that preseason game for Joe Andreessen since even last year had gone pretty well.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Like anything he had been faced with seemed like results were positive.
I am interested in what the defensive line room looks like with the two suspensions.
Mm-hmm.
Larry Ogunjobi did not play a snap last week. Does that
okay.
speak to you about anything? He's a veteran. He's not going to practice for 6 weeks. You would think they'd want him in there if they have plans for him.
Yeah. Unless they're getting... But they did play Michael Hoyt. That's the other thing. So it's like if they're different...
They did because play Michael Hoyt, and I think Michael Hoyt's going to play a lot.
I was going to say maybe they're not playing Ogunjobi because they're trying to get the kids ready. They want them getting more reps, but then why would they
I don't think Ogunjobi's making the team.
The only thing is $4 million cap hit this year.
Ogunjobi?
Yeah. You know what? You save more than I thought. If you cut Larry Ogunjobi, you save $3.2 million.
He's a goner.
Of the 4.1.
He's a goner.
This year. Next year, you're taking on $2.5 million.
He's a goner.
You know, that's not as
Dwayne Carter,
ridiculous as I thought it was.
They're going to be keeping Dwayne Carter over him.
Well, let's say this about Ogunjobi. Yeah. Player we haven't talked about much since he was suspended right after the Bills signed him. 803-0550, the phone number. If you got a question for Sal, he's coming up next. Jeremy and Joe. Nate is in for Jeremy, and this is WGR.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.